Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and I am here, as per usual, with Josh Olsiewicz. Hey, Josh.
Mr. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. We were talking about our office situation. Gotta say, I'm pretty psyched that I moved to this place like a year and a half ago. Got my own office. I mean, it's the dream. Fiber. It's great.
Yeah, but don't you have a bed in your office so that you can rest during late nights of trading?
Yes. Doesn't everybody who is serious about trading? I mean,
no, I find that a very weird thing to do.
Why is that weird?
I don't know. I just think it's really weird. But that's okay. You do you. I used to have a couch in my office, but I don't anymore since, as we mentioned, my office is now a playroom as well, so the couch had to go. So I have to go all the way across this wall to the living room if I'm to rest.
I'm just
the body while working the mind on trading and other things. But
too lazy. Not like house. I got a ball. I throw it against the wall. No, I'm kidding.
You know what? I'm pretty freaking hyped right now, Josh.
What is there to be hyped about? Everything looks like Garbo.
Oh, that's what I'm hyped about. I'm ready for Legacy to turn over. I shorted Tesla this week, and I mean, when has that ever gone wrong for anybody?
And ever.
It's going to zero. That's all I'm saying. Tesla's going to zero. I know this is a crypto podcast. We'll be with you, folks, but I sold the vast majority of my BBBY exposure over $10, and then it immediately dumped, which feels good. Feels good every time. I was big, thick BBBY. So I'm like across the market, delta negative at the moment, which means probably net short. I'm long metals, which is a little dicey if volatility goes up. Therefore, I'm also long volatility, so it's kind of hedging that. And I'm short some equities. I've got some calendar spreads on indexes. So I'm ready. Just bring me whatever you got, Mr. Market. You know what I mean? What about you? Have you paid attention to Legacy at all? Oh, this is beautiful.
Not particularly. The only thing I'm looking at really is the VIX. That's really the only thing. When that, talked about this last week, I think, but when that starts popping up, we're in for some turbulent times in crypto, unfortunately, because we're so connected.
Yeah, man. We, on Crypto Bobby, great guy, but he was like in before correlation tweets come back or something, and then immediately everybody started doing that. But it's freaking true. We talked about that last week. We showed Low Strife's tweet. About how it had shown about a day of proof that was going to be the case, and now we're continuing to see it. Legacy looks like trash. It's a lot of expiration stuff going on, both in Legacy today, crypto next week, June 26th. Over $1 billion of options open interest is up for expiry a week from now, so a lot can happen. When those types of events are there, it's quad witching today in Legacy, which is a similar type of event. So it's when your index futures, your index options, your stock options, and single stock futures all expire at the same time. So basically, it's like all this crap is closing out. People have to settle their positions or roll them or do whatever. So it can introduce volatility both that day, but what I also find is you can get signs of your next trend as it comes out of that. You know, like you'll see over the next day or two, like what the potential is coming up. So that's Legacy today, but crypto, June 26th is the big day of reckoning. Oh, let me transition to you because you got some of that info up right now. I released a video yesterday, Josh, about how, you know, I was looking for volatility. And every time we got a decent sized candle, like a, say a $500, $700 candle, it then just kind of chewed back, clawed back, went back to doing nothing. And what I think we're seeing is the market really just waiting out and maybe we'll find kind of a Max Payne situation for this open interest coming next week. So I tend to think we're going to just kind of shift towards wherever Max Payne is as this expiry comes up, and then we'll make a decision as we finish out June. What do you think?
Yeah, we're in this awkward middle stage where the quarterly doesn't have enough time on it to really take a big position.
Yeah,
what, if you're thinking in terms of futures contracts,
yeah,
so you're kind of
you don't want to take a position when like a week left,
right?
It's just a YOLO if you do that.
So, I think we'll see after June 26th. I think there's going to be some volatility, but historically Q3 has been bearish. I think we could easily fill in this inverted head and shoulders, this macro thing, wherever I have it in some chart here.
Yeah. Does Skew show Max Payne? I know some people build them. I think it's around 10K though, which is just in our zone of not being resolved, which also lines up nicely with some kind of weekend-ish pump, you know?
I don't know, man. Everything's just been so wonky lately with Legacy being a clown show and crypto not doing its own thing and all this garbage on ETH that's going on with comp and scaling ETH 2.0. And I don't know. I'm not blanketly bullish right now across the board. I'm looking more and more at on-chain fundamentals lately just because technicals have been so boring.
Well, I think some of this is fundamental, don't you?
What? Well, to me, fundamentals are like not price-related stuff, but like actual use of the chain.
Chain, actual chain-related. So like I'm looking at this chart here, open interest by Strike in thousands of Bitcoin. The two tallest bars are at 10K and 11K. 11,900 Bitcoin, 14,500 Bitcoin. But I don't know. I don't have the put-call ratios on that. And then by thousands of Bitcoin, 105,000 Bitcoin expiring June 26th. And for reference, July 31st has 25,000. So it's four times as much as the next largest expiry date. And it's like 200 times as much the following week. So it's just a huge... huge expiry for Bitcoin options. So we're going to see some fireworks maybe the day of, but I kind of anticipate it'll be like right after expiry, personally.
Yeah, I don't know. It's usually a couple days before expiry, there's volatility, and then through the weekend into the new contract, I think we'll know, like you said, what's going on as far as the trend.
So as much as, you know, it's easy to want to try to draw these triangle patterns and crap, like, I feel like there's too much derivative exposure in the market to really make something of these. And I think your vertical lines for important dates, you used to do these charts a ton. I think you still do on your videos where you show, like, key dates, you know, CME expiry or Deribit expiry. And certainly these quarterly Deribit options expiries need to go on those vertical lines.
Well,
look what we have here. It's annotated and everything.
I guess I need a new chart for those lines. Like TradingView should do this for you. They have other settings where you can like turn on these bubbles at the bottom. Like that's what we need for this. But so CME's 26th. I don't have the other stuff on here, but really it's anything with lots of volume. That's why OKEX was the original impetus for that tracking system, because the quarterlies lined up so perfectly with the trends and rollovers and volatility. It went every other quarter was bullish or bearish, very similar to how the CME has been so far. It's just interesting the way that works out, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, June 26th. I'm also looking at this I can find it. Where did I put it? This triangle that was puking out an inverted head and shoulders at the bottom.
Yeah, that's what I've got on my chart as well, and almost the exact same thing. We transition back and forth between those, but it's like is it puking out or is it just kind of floating out? You know, I don't really know what to make of that.
Well, to me, the triangle is definitely done here. Like,
yeah,
it's not a triangle anymore.
It's a rectangle now.
it's whatever this mess is. But low time frames, I can see the case for the inverted head and shoulders here with the volume profile, especially. So if it can get back above 9.6, then I think we might be okay. But otherwise, I think 7.1 over the next month is certainly possible.
Yeah, I've been foregoing that 7.1 number, thinking it's BS. But with the correlation to legacy, if that's going to be true and remain true, if legacy turns over with whatever fears, you know, just retrace of the lows or case numbers going up in middle America, Apple closing more stores today in those states, a lot of things indicating that there's some weakness in legacy. And if we keep correlating with that, then sure, 7.8K, whatever. I still lean towards liking 8.1. That's my number. That's my number I like if we go down.
All I'm doing is just looking at the cloud. I don't like or dislike any number, Brian.
Yeah, the cloud says 7K, right? What's the top of the cloud, though? Like, if we just spike down, say, early.
8.99, something like that, or 8.5.
Yeah.
It's got lots of time.
Yeah.
For this trade.
See, that's not quite enough meat for me if we go down. Like, I think if we break down, we're going to get a move. But I'm more, so, yeah.
It lines up with the rollover, so that's June 30th. If I just put 26th on here, like that's just, it's just so perfect for a down move. I don't know. It looks good for down to me here, honestly.
Yeah. What's the funding and all that kind of crap look like? Have you looked?
Yeah, funding's fine. It's flat pretty much across the board.
Somebody asked. No, you're good.
And then ETH also looks like it wants 215. If I roll this back to the 8 hour, whatever's happening on ETH right now doesn't look good. And I had LTC up there. LTC actually looks really bad.
Meanwhile, DeFi's gone wild though on ETH. You know, there's some big stuff happening in that landscape.
This is LTC, how it like gets this curve.
Litecoin, you know, is continuously weaker than everything else. Like that recovery is crap.
You know, it leads both directions. You know, it'll break up before everything and it'll break down before everything.
Yeah, but when it's not strong on it. It's not been strong the last year or two on its breakups. Especially like if you look relative to BTC, it certainly lags. Was that a giraffe that you drew a second ago, by the way?
Yeah, that's what I was sort of getting at.
Yeah.
When you get this H shape, that's usually not a sign for bullish continuation.
Yeah. It's you and, was it you and Hearns came up with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
God, I love Hearns. He's pretty quiet these days, but he's great.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him in a little bit.
I'm going to move myself up there.
But yeah, LTC doesn't look good. For sure. ETH looks like it wants 215. Okay, so here's the thing with DeFi, right? It's like there's a specific tweet yesterday that really triggered me regarding BTC versus ETH.
Was it that Ryan guy?
No. I'm not even going to say who it was.
They don't deserve the word.
Because it just doesn't matter. But it goes back to security and safety with money and certainty. Like we talked about all this last episode, but you know, having the certainty of the inflationary schedule, disinflationary schedule, having the certainty that your money's not going to disappear overnight. Like if you need that sort of certainty, then ETH is not for you. Sorry. DeFi is certainly not for you. You know, there are massive risks in DeFi. The attack surface is unimaginably large.
Yeah.
So it's great that we have something that we can experiment with. That's awesome. I've started to do some of that myself, but do I trust it? Hell no. Why would anybody trust it? You know. And the other part of it is when you're talking about ETH accruing value, if we look at Omni versus Tether. We had that situation, right? Like Tether was a great token on Omni, but Omni didn't necessarily accrue any value. So there's always that comparison to be made. Like, why should ETH be worth anything if it has DeFi stuff on it? You know, that isn't a guarantee, right?
Yeah. You know, we got the Coinbase list of potential tokens, whatever we talked about last week, 18 tokens. Well, they already switched and said comp, C-O-M-P, which is some kind of compound governance token, is on the way. Quick review from Brian Armstrong and team. And then I was looking at it, and apparently half the shares go to shareholders of Compound Labs, Inc., and Compound founders and future Compound team members.
So, Brian, if you want to come on, Brian Armstrong.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you on.
Love to have you on. And the largest holder of comp tokens is A16Z, Andreessen Horowitz. Been really tight with Coinbase. And it's like, it's so blatant, you know? And how is this not a security? Tell me. I need to know how is this not a security?
Dude, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
it's a four year drip, and these comp tokens are worth like $200 right now because they're pumping like crazy on Uniswap, and FTX listed them. Man, they're so fast at listing these things. They got like $1 million in volume in a day or something, which is probably more than this dadgum token will do on Coinbase. So it's being listed, and then for 4 years. Andreessen Horowitz can just dump their supply on Coinbase people. Just drip, drip, drip.
Yep. It's disgusting, honestly. I don't know how that's legal.
I don't either.
And not only will they drip it, but Coinbase will actively promote the token.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's part of what they do when they have, you know, they have the listing. So Brian Armstrong said, I'm thinking about doing more podcasts or YouTube interviews. Which one should I check out? A couple people mentioned us there. Thank you. Shout out to y'all. Whale Panda said some of the questions that he wanted to ask. I think it's a good start. What's up with the Neutrino hacking team? Shady listings of comp and otherwise. Thanks for the mention there, Whale Panda. Coinbase is going down every time the market moves like $300. Still not supporting Bitcoin or Lightning development, and then what to what degree they are cooperating with the IRS, DEA, etc. I think those are good questions for Brian Armstrong. So I invite him on. We will be fair. We'll be tough but fair.
Well, it goes back to one of my favorite paradigms that I learned from Balaji, somebody who, like all crypto OGs, turned out to be an interesting character later in life, but this voice exit loyalty paradigm, where if you're a user of a part of some network protocol, whatever, government, you know, culture, and you have grievances and they're not heard, then you just go somewhere else. And that's what's happened with most people on Coinbase. Certainly, I mean, most people who get started in crypto in the US started on Coinbase.
And they still have the entry gates because they have the name recognition amongst retail. But they may not forever. I mean, freaking Cash App is killing it on that front, and it's easier and cheaper. You know what? I had said that I would mention it, and then I forgot. But we had talked about onboarding in our episode for new investors a couple weeks ago, and Swan Bitcoin was brought up as a great place to do that. And I just listened to them on an interview with the CEO on Tales from the Crypt and with Marty Bent. And Swan's fees are even cheaper than Cash App, and they've got automation and some other stuff built in that's pretty cool. So Swan Bitcoin would be another place to check out. That I need to collect a list of these resources, like better places than Coinbase or Gemini to onboard crypto.
Yeah.
probably not going to earn us these interviews talking about that. But the fees there just freaking suck at those places.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of Swan. But the other problem with these onboarding stuff is it's highly jurisdictional dependent, and some of the stuff just disappears, you know, just as soon as it's
I think they're everywhere but New York. Like, they went the legitimate route. They are just, they have some strategies that they've used to make it cheaper. So, and they're like pretty hardcore Bitcoiners. Let's see. But yeah, swanbitcoin.com is the right place. Not an ad. It could be, though. It could be. You guys call us.
Insert your ad here.
Anyway, so that was the comp stuff is kind of leading the DeFi news this week, and a lot of speculation around DeFi. And I've heard a lot of the returns are just incredibly high right now in DeFi, so I don't really know what to make of all of that. It's interesting. I mean, my Ren trade the other week just got better and better and better while I wasn't in it. That made me sad. And that was pretty centered around DeFi stuff. This was my entry, and I sold, I don't know, 10 sats later. And it's up. How much is it up? A lot.
Yeah, the DeFi. 40%.
Freaking 40%. And I bought it because it was that this was rumored for Coinbase as well, so it had some momentum plus news and so up 40%, I missed all of that. Thankfully, I have a good trade in the middle of that, but not as good as that.
Another thing about DeFi, again, I'm just going to continue to just crap all over this stuff because there isn't, to me, there isn't like a counter narrative or a voice on the other side of it. It's all like, DeFi is great. DeFi is amazing. When DeFi started, wasn't it all about like banking the unbanked and like onboarding people without KYC AML for banking services? I might be wrong. I might be wrong on that message, but I'm pretty sure that's where it started. Very similar to Bitcoin, you know. Bitcoin was the same way.
Certainly makes sense.
And now it's sort of morphed into which ways can we reg arb derivatives and lending to get the highest yields for people. Like, that's what it's morphed into, you know?
Yeah, the yield chasing makes me a little nervous. Seems like House of Cards-ish, just could fall down. Or if price goes to crap, what happens, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It's great when price is flat or going up. But it's all just a giant long squeeze. Because as soon as price collapses, the stuff's just going to tumble over, you know? Yeah. As it has already. It's done this over and over again. It's not going to not do it the 15th time, you know?
Okay, look at this story from the block. Compound's outstanding debt grows 400% over 3 days as comp's distribution begins. $200 for the price of comp. Borrowers and lenders are close to $600,000 in subsidies per day. Like, who's paying this stuff? Where does this come from?
I don't know. It's beyond me to even try to understand.
It's crazy.
I don't get it. I don't get why the token's worth anything. I don't get why people are lending through that platform. I don't understand any of it, honestly.
Well, it's happening. That's what's happening.
What else is happening?
What else are you thinking about? What is this, the total locked in DeFi? What's that? The 1 point something?
Yeah, we're up to an all-time high now. 1.3 billion USD value.
Your screen can't even handle it. The font. There you go.
Sorry. So that's good for DeFi. I don't think it's necessarily great for ETH at the end of the day. Again, back to the Tether Omni thing.
Yeah, Ethereum's just the pipes, you know.
The other thing about Tether is all these DeFi people are touting Tether and other stablecoins as like a great way to get into DeFi. And that isn't decentralized if you need a third party, right? Like, yeah, the logic just baffles my mind.
It's certainly a place for yield, though. I mean, if you can have some confidence in the system or you spread it out amongst multiple providers, these yields are like anywhere between 7-8% up to like 20+. I mean, that's impossible against USD in any legacy type of institution. So if you've got an appetite for risk and have some confidence in their security, then shoot, go for it, you know?
Yeah. Somebody at the Techme Capital, the company I work for, started a DeFi portfolio last beginning of the year, like December, January, and it's up 100%.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it isn't like crazy returns compared to like some of the alts that have been up 100%. But for like the yields and stuff, what you're talking about collectively, like it's spread out to like 10 things probably. Some of which are like no risk, low risk. And some of which are just like holding a certain like REN token or something. But yeah, so DeFi is doing really well, definitely. From a price perspective and from a like just playground, playbox, sandbox perspective, a lot of stuff's happening.
Yeah. I think a lot of it's interesting too, but you know, not all of it is going to be made the same. Some of these are going to disappear, like you said, because either their security is crap or they're outright scams or whatever else.
Yeah. So just all I'm saying is for people not to get sucked into this narrative and, you know, do some of your own due diligence or whatever before really becoming a community member.
Yeah. Hey, I got another thing, question for you, something you've been doing is these token sets.
Yeah.
I looked into that a long time ago. I really liked the idea of Prism, which was a product from, oh my gosh, what's it called? Shapeshift. So it was like a portfolio builder in a smart contract. And I found the set protocol like a year plus ago, year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they must have come a long way, because when I was looking at it, you could really only buy a couple of pre-built baskets. But the basics here is this is a portfolio that someone else can copy, and it's essentially like they're buying an ERC-20 token, right?
Yeah, so it's basically copy trading plus tokenized portfolios. So you can either buy like a RoboSat, which is, if I can find it somewhere on here. They have like specific bot trading strategies that you can, here they are, that you can long. So you say, let's say you want to buy like a strategy or a set. You go to that set and you use ETH or USDC or whatever the set is to buy the set. And then you control like a token that represents a value in that portfolio. And then at any time, you can cash that in and get the value back.
And you can maintain custody and everything else the whole time because it's a custom token made for this. It's
right.
It's kind of similar to the Uniswap concept, right? Where you can kind of tokenize baskets, right? And they can be distributed or traded or whatever else, but they're representative of other tokens.
Yeah, I don't think it's a new idea at all. But it might be one of the better executed ideas that I've seen. Because I also saw this a long time ago and thought, oh, that's pretty interesting. You know, as traders, we're interested in anything with related to trading, right? So I might be shitting all over DeFi and then at the same time be using token sets merely because I'm interested in the trading part of it, you know?
Yeah. If you're doing this, one of the things I'm interested in is, because they have a leaderboard over here, show mine. Can I create set portfolios where I say like, all right, here's like a medium risk portfolio, a high risk portfolio, low risk, and then I have tokens for that. But then can I change what the makeup is of that in the background while someone still holds it? So they're essentially following my portfolio, or do they only follow like the initial construction?
So I don't think you can alter you can't alter the deal.
Okay. So once I say I want like 20% Ethereum and 30% Bitcoin and whatever else, like it sticks to that.
No. So you can't alter the token. Like you can't diversify and change the set itself.
Oh,
like
I see. I can't pull in EOS or something.
Right. So the set is ETH USDC. You can't change it to BTC Link, for example. Like you can't you can't do it like that. You can change the percentages, though, the allocations between ETH and USDC.
Cool. So I can put like 5 tokens in this set, and then I can shift my balance between them, and someone can follow that, and they just automatically adopt these adjustments that I make.
Right. So each set is one pair, and then any trader can make any number of sets.
Yeah. I think that's pretty cool, because I wanted to make some of these, especially back when retail was so interested in things, so that I could essentially put together a portfolio that's like, hey, this is a thing you can do. You can buy these, and they have certain parameters built in. I define those parameters, and then, you know, they follow along. So anyway, I knew you were playing with that, and I think it's a really cool idea. So you're on there. You're screwed.
Yeah, and it's just another way to publicly have a portfolio that's tracked, and people can participate if they want, obviously, but they retain custody. I don't know. I think it's interesting.
Yeah. So you have 7 set holders. What's that mean? There's 7 people that are holding your token?
Right. So there's me. You have to seed it yourself of $1,000 each set.
Uh-huh.
Or however much after that. And then so there's me and 6 other people, apparently.
Cool. And yours are built on an alligator system?
Yeah, the alligator fractal.
Yeah.
Initially I thought this was all like automated, but it's not. You have to definitely make the trades yourself and the allocations yourself. I thought I could like set rules, parameters and stuff, and like it would automatically do it.
So you still have to do some work.
Yeah, but that's fine. Whatever.
It's still a cool idea though, because you could tell someone, hey, if you want to follow a system that I'm doing or whatever, you can.
Yeah, I mean, you could even like put a dollar in there and then just follow the alerts for it.
make changes.
If you wanted. Or just you could probably just get email alerts for free, honestly. I don't even know.
Yeah. It's a neat idea. I didn't mean to shill their stuff this whole time, but I had looked at them forever ago, and it was just not, it was like you could buy a stablecoin set, and I'm like, I don't really care about doing that, you know? But now that they've expanded it, I find it pretty interesting, so. It's the kind of copy trading, social trading that I think makes a lot of sense. As far as I can tell, it's not centralized because it's all based on smart contracts. We just trashed DeFi, and this has some of the same liabilities as DeFi would. Like the code could be
DeFi.
Right, and the code could be vulnerable.
It is centralized because they are the code holders, right? And if there's some backdoor key that no one knows about, which is possible, I'm sure they've talked about that. But
sure, but custody is not centralized. Like custody is not, it's not a centralized exchange or anything. It's not like someone sends their Ethereum to SET. They send it to the contract, but it's still on their wallet or whatever, and then they're locked into the rules of the smart contract.
Sure, but if the smart contract is altered, like, you know, there goes everything, right?
Yeah. Some Sailor 07 in the chat just reminded me that Overstock is up 860% from the bottom. So offering better returns than DeFi was where it came up with that.
Oh, is it?
So anyway, I thought that was cool. Are you going to make other sets, or are you sticking with the alligator one?
Yeah, so there's some other stuff I can't quite talk about yet. But
Do you have a relationship with these folks?
Yeah, so I thought you could just like sign up and like it was like plug and play, but there's this whole like process you have to go through to get onboarded.
You're like a certified set maker.
I guess. I'm a blue check mark on Set Protocol. No, but there's some other stuff coming that I can't talk about just yet. But yeah, I do plan on making more sets eventually, but I really just wanted to get onboarded and see how to use the platform. Because it's not like trading, whereas you can just go in and like say, oh, I want to buy this, or I want to put a limit order here. They don't have any of that yet.
Right.
So, and the fees are like $5 to $15 to rebalance your stuff right now because of the network. So you got to take that into consideration.
Well, it still looks interesting to me.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I just like the fact that it tracks positions. You know, that's all I really care about.
Yeah. All right, so if I put you on the spot, and I say you got to choose a direction, you're voting down on Bitcoin, right?
Until we're above 9, 10, or until we are above 10K, it's definitely down.
10K on what time frame? Like a daily close, weekly close?
Sipping the coffee. Daily close, definitely.
Okay. I actually want a little higher than that for the real move. Like, to me, I just want this weekly close above the prior weekly, 10,150. I think once that happens, we got bazinga time upside. I think any of this downward potential is just ways to buy the dip, though. These are just dip buying locations. These are not sell it all and go away type of things. These are, you know, if you want to put some on the sidelines here, you may miss a little bit of upside. But I see it from the risk-reward profile like you're talking about. It makes total sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's, I don't think this is like selling June and walk away stuff.
What happened to sell in May and walk away?
I don't know.
Coronavirus shut that down, delayed.
That didn't happen. ETHBTC is still snaking. Man, this setup just looks amazing in like 2 months, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It was my turn to drink coffee then.
Sorry.
That's fine. I have an update to my ETHBTC trade. Remember that one that worked well, and now we're just kind of sitting in no man's land, really, because for me, I agree with you, it looks pretty good. The next entry for me, I really want it to just go ahead and clear the prior highs, like make a higher high over 0.0256-ish. Once it does that, then I want to play it up to 0.03-something. Just kind of a level-to-level type of trade. Because to me, it's still showing an inability to clear this level. It's still making a really pretty long-term lower high. So until I get that push to the higher high, it's a little scary for me for the second trade setup.
Yeah, if I turn off all of this stuff here and look at... The reason I like the alligator's fractal thing is because it's quicker for alts than cloud. So, like, it's not rocket science, but any higher high here would be a long entry signal.
Yeah, and it's also a proper breakout from your pennant there, which is cleaner with the line chart because that's based on the close. Like the pennant that I had shown is kind of messy. Any kind of, if you look back at mine, any kind of failure to break out like this is just redraw your chart. You know, like if it was going to work the way it looks, then it should have broken out cleanly. Yours is more based off, was that a weekly chart? 2 day.
This is two day
closes.
Which is even crazier for an alt pair to be this slow. And
but it could go all the way back down to the bottom of that pennant at the same time. You know, like there's.
Yeah, but that's why you don't enter a position here, right?
Right. Like, yeah, we're both kind of saying the same thing. You wait until you get the higher high above that previous peak, and then you play it to the next level up. Which for you, what's that volume line there in the middle of the diamond? Yeah, what's that?
031.
Okay, same location.
Yeah. So yeah, it leans bullish, but it needs time.
And you know, some other alts have really shown a lot of promise lately. Like there's been some individualized alt runs.
But like what?
Well, like Ren. I think a trend like that, one of the cleanest for sure. I think Link is still consolidating, but it's the Link consolidations. It's ready for a move. I mean, look at that. Oops.
It's squeezing between highs and the 200. Last time I checked.
This is either an incredible distribution or it's going to rear up for another big move up, but it looks like a bullish consolidation to me more than a bearish one.
I don't know.
This thing's never had a downtrend.
Yeah, that's what worries me.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to hand it to the Link Marines, man. They have done well.
Because as soon as the Link Marines disappear, they'll scatter like roaches as soon as the lights get turned on, aka we go bearish. Just like XRP, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of these Marines are just one Marine with 10 bot Marines, you know? So, yeah, I don't have any Link up here. Do you?
No.
Yeah.
But when it moves, it's going to go to 60K at least. I don't have to draw the fib to see that. Just kind of what you like, what kind of upward momentum you expect.
It looks good, but
if this was a stock, I'd be bullish as crap. Like, I'd be super bullish. It's not a stock, it's an altcoin relative to BTC. So it could just be incredible distribution before a downtrend, but I tend to think not.
Tezos had a bit of a move yesterday. They got retraced pretty quickly.
Yeah, and Tezos and Link looked pretty similar, but Tezos now is starting to lag. Let's see. Haven Protocol being shilled in the chat for another decentralized DeFi one. I don't know. That's Haven. The old Haven, Haven, is now Synthetics, and it's one of the DeFi leaders. That one's gone crazy. That'll be next. That'll be the next comp. Coinbase is absolutely going to list that. A16Z owns a bunch of it. It's the same story as comp.
Yeah. There's a giraffe on Tezos, by the way.
Yeah, it is a little giraffe-y. What was the other question we had? We asked, give me your thoughts on Numeraire BTC. Also on the list, let me pull up the Numeraire chart because I haven't thought about that coin since 2017.
How do people find this stuff? Like,
oh, Numeraire was a 2017 hype coin, like AI or prediction or something like that.
Sure, but all I do all day long, every day, is looking at crypto stuff. And still, I haven't heard of most of these coins. So what am I doing with my time, you know?
I mean, I don't know. You weren't shitcoining very hard in 2017.
Correct.
It was a perpetual downtrend in 2017, like most alts, until the end of the year. It didn't have the boost up like some. If you look at this purely from support and resistance, I mean, it looks like it's trying to establish a new level here, but on the lower time frames, it doesn't look great to me. If it gets listed on Coinbase, like it's on, this is on the list for Coinbase, and yet look at this Bittrex volume, it's zero. But this looks like distribution to me on a daily time frame, maybe even a complex head and shoulders.
If you want to see a real chart, look at Sia SC.
Oh yeah, man. I was early on Sia. I played that, not the breakout one, but the previous one. I sold the high on that and I've ignored it since then. I should have bought that retest of the lows and I didn't. But it's beastly.
Yeah, I don't know.
I never would have expected Sia to be further along in their roadmap than Filecoin and these other ones. Like Filecoin, what happened? Has Filecoin still not distributed their dadgum token?
I don't think so. Again, I was thinking about this yesterday. Like, name an ICO that's done anything.
These things are this is criminal for some of these.
Just name an ICO that's done anything. Even Tezos, they haven't done anything. They haven't done a single thing. Show me a list of dApps on Tezos. Show me a list of security tokens on Tezos.
There's a difference between asking for a list of dApps on them and asking for what they've done. A lot of them have spent a lot of engineering hours building out tools and crap. I know I shilled Cosmos the other week, but they've built some stuff that's pretty cool. That doesn't mean anyone's using it yet. Like everyone's chasing use cases and getting people to utilize public blockchains. But
it goes back to building empty cathedrals, right?
Yeah, it is. It is building empty cathedrals. But yeah, that Sia chart is pretty nice. I've got Algo on here. I held it, and then I tweeted asking if it was going to pump, and then I sold it.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't mean it quite that way, but it came off not great. I lost my energy for it. My shitcoin budget had to go other places.
If you're in the Joe 007 camp, if you agree with him about alt season or alts moving, it's generally not good for the market as a whole.
You mean so by the time alts start moving, it's time for it's late cycle?
Yeah. So if alts represent dumb money, you know, then it's usually a top sign.
I think all these alts are pretty low volume. Even the bigger tokens, the books are not, they're not, you know, they're not super liquid. Even the one larger market caps. Look at this crap, Adam. I definitely sold the top on that. I literally sold like right there on that daily. I was lucky, considering my trade was supposed to go up to the entire next level, but it just looked like it was failing the existing, like the lower level. So I peaced out.
Yeah, I think I'm staking Adam, right? That's Cosmos, isn't it?
Cosmos? Yeah, they got staking.
That's Adam, right?
Yeah.
Again, why would you have a different name for your... So confusing.
They have a reason for it, I'm sure, but I don't know.
It's not a good one, I'm sure. What chart do you even look at for Cosmos? Binance, maybe?
Yeah. Pretty much Binance until proven otherwise for any of these.
This looks like the S&P does, right? It's like got this rising wedge thing or something going on here.
You're looking at the USD. Yeah, all the USDs look like a kind of a inverse U. Potential mu shape.
Potential giraffe in the making. Kraken has the oldest Adam history. Somebody, Giovanni, let's take a look.
But Adam is hella illiquid on Kraken.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
you can
that's
at least, Kraken. You can at least buy and sell it on Binance. I want to talk about a concept that I made a video about, which was the idea of making concentrated bets. You and I have argued about this some. But I made a video about making that a concentrated crypto portfolio offers the best chance for outperformance. I discussed some of the details of that in the video, but I wanted to dig into it a little more. The difference between a diversified portfolio and a concentrated portfolio. You at least, you're concentrated in some ways. Like, you're concentrated in the sense that you pay attention to crypto, right? Like, the majority of your net worth is you invest via crypto rather than legacy, right?
Correct.
So you're concentrated in that sense. I'm more like I have buckets. So I have some buckets where long-term passive investment, other buckets where it's legacy but more risk on, and then other buckets where it's crypto. But then within crypto, my personal philosophy is that I want to make concentrated bets on directional moves, whether in Bitcoin or increasing Bitcoin through altcoin plays, where I may only trade one or two altcoins, but it'll be in some kind of decent size relative to the amount that I have exposed to the market. Whereas a lot of people will say, well, never put more than like 2% of your portfolio in one token and buy 30 different ones. But to me, they're just not they're too correlated to spread them out that way. And you're almost guaranteed to lose relative to the overall market performance, right? Like, you might as well just trade alts over BTC or some kind of quasi-index like that. Whereas if you pick the right tokens, if you're trading altcoins, then you can get outsized wins because you picked the one that's going to outperform the rest of the alt market. Do you think that's a good idea or a stupid idea, or just depending on risk tolerance?
Oh, I mean, I agree with that. We talked about maybe two episodes ago about concentrating.
But you,
I mean, that's,
but
that's
you, you're essentially going basket. Like, you've got your small altcoin fund where you do it more of a basket style.
I mean, I guess.
Is that because you just don't want to think about it?
I guess it's like a walled garden situation where I have several gardens growing, you know, but they're all concentrated. Like, so the alt basket isn't like, you know, exchange tokens and DeFi and stable coins. It's just alts, you know?
Yeah.
And like the DeFi portfolio I was talking about earlier is just DeFi stuff. So I agree with you that in general, all this stuff is heavily correlated, which obviously if it's bullish, then that's great.
Yeah. In the video I did, I talked about Warren Buffett's quotes on this previously, and Giovanni in the chat is also quoting that concentration creates wealth and diversification preserves it. And that's essentially my point as well. Like, if I'm looking for, you know, if I want to double my Bitcoin, it's going to be harder to double my Bitcoin spread out amongst a bunch of different trade ideas versus if I have one or two trade ideas where I have conviction. I may be wrong on those, and that's the risk in these. But if I'm right, I have a much better chance on those bigger wins to stack those W's, and through a concentrated play, increase my portfolio size.
I think a similar concept with time horizon is the longer you wait, the higher the likelihood of making a profit, which is dangerous if you become a community member, obviously. But
that's part of the thing. I need to find it. Thinking USD on Twitter. I don't think it was even original, but it was true. And you talked about the types of trades there are. Did you see him? Here we go.
Oh, winning trade, small loser, break even, small loss. That one.
Yeah. So he said showing four types of trade. A big win, a small win, a break-even, or a small loss. In other words, the only thing that you really need to make sure you avoid is the big loss. And when you have a concentrated bet, you can still fit within this type of parameter. You can still avoid the big loss. But, and this is why I wanted to bring this up with the video that I did, because there's a couple of things that you need to consider when you're in a coin, if you're going to do this. When it's concentrated, you have the ability to dump more quickly than if you have, like, 10 or 20 or 50 altcoins, where it's, unless you're doing it algorithmically or something, it's very difficult to sell that many. But you can go in and manually sell one or two altcoins if you change your mind and prevent the big loss. And then the other thing is around liquidity, which is the tricky part. There's this balance between large cap and small cap, whereas typically to get enough liquidity to be able to sell or buy in decent size, you need a certain market cap to be able to do so, because there's some tokens where it's like their 24-hour volume is like sub 1 BTC, you know? But there's a place in there where you can get something that's small cap enough to where there's outsized performance opportunity. Like, if you're just buying Ethereum, it's going to be pretty close to the overall alt market's performance. But if you're buying like something between 50th and 200th on the listing of market cap that has some liquidity for whatever your position size is and your portfolio size is, you can potentially get in and out. It may not happen in like 5 minutes, but maybe over the course of a day or 2 days or something like that. But then your upside potential, there's a greater chance that you can outperform the broader alts market. So that's kind of the thing I was trying to express in that video and wanted to extend on today, is because I think you can, with the right blend of the liquidity of the coin, the market cap of the coin, the knowledge of the coin or potential fundamental events occurring to give you an edge, with the liquidity protection, I think you can have a concentrated bet, avoid large losses, and have potential to outperform doing that rather than spreading it out a bunch of different stuff.
I agree. I've also seen this argument about correlations. Like, if everything's correlated, we're still in a bear market.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's what we're seeing, though. We're seeing some stuff not be so correlated.
I mean, I'd have to look at the numbers pretty deeply to find evidence for that argument.
I'm just saying because I see individual tokens going up for news reasons or whatever else almost every day now.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But I mean, just the hypothesis that everything is, when everything is correlated, we're in a bear market. We're not talking about like anecdotal day over day. We're talking about like, you know, month over month correlations.
Yeah.
So yeah, like if the coin has news, it can go up, sure. If it has a listing pump, sure, that can happen. But everything, for the most part, is pretty correlated still.
It is.
Really, Tezos is actually an outlier there. And Link, go ahead.
Yeah, it is pretty correlated. I think the difference is if you can find what's going to be a difference maker for a particular token, and what's an appropriate gain, you know? Not that this was a winning trade, but this Atom chart shows an example where the profit idea, if it went up to the next level, I was only looking for like 30% relative to BTC. But if you have a concentrated portfolio where half of your funds that you're willing to trade with are in a trade like this, and you have a tight stop loss, to just recognize, okay, I was right or I was wrong, 30% upside with that larger percent of your portfolio is good, which is why you need to protect from the large loss. But point being, it's still a decent opportunity. You don't need a 5x or 10x or 100x like some people are talking about. To me, those are the people that are like tranching, you know, four or five orders across 50 coins, and they're buying, you know, with 0.5% of their overall portfolio with each purchase. That's not what I'm interested in. Not personally. That's a more laid back passive attitude, but you're so subjected to the broad market trends when you do that. And I don't have the patience for that. And I don't think it gives me enough opportunity when I do that.
Yeah, I think I have to be really careful. Like, again, that's why I started that altcoin thing in December 2019. It's like alts looked bottom of the barrel. So I just bought a bunch of them, right?
Yeah.
So I think you just have to be careful with your timing there, but it can work out.
What are we looking on Skew here?
I was just looking at the correlation matrix again. It's actually lower than I thought. I thought all this stuff was in the 90s as far as correlation is concerned, but stuff
70s and 80s.
70s and 80s now, BTC.
ADA is a good one. It's one of the lowest correlations on there. And
ADA.
I don't like ADA, but my point is they had news, and that's what led to, like, people know it, like, that knew that was coming. So market knowledge led to potential outperformance. That's kind of where my point comes in.
Okay.
And because people knew that they finally had their mainnet crap coming, and the bet was to say whether or not it would be market moving or not, and it was, at least enough for some degree of outperformance. Now, people that might have been in that might have been in it for too long or too far back or mistimed it poorly. That's all part of trading. But if you got into this while it was basing and stuff, and then you got out now, like, you almost doubled your money on a bet where you knew the whole time, like, the whole point of this trade is to play their mainnet release.
Yeah, that's not even, I think the danger there is thinking, like, if you're a community member, that this is going to be some fundamental shift in the coin.
Yeah, but that's the person that's looking for some gargantuan move. Don't be that person. Just look. Be the person looking for the nice trade. Like, you don't have to. You don't need to do the flipping of ADA and Ethereum or some crap. Like, you're not looking for a 10x. You're looking for a 50% gain, something like that. Look at that. Look at that basing period you show on there.
Yeah, I was in and out of it already, but I don't know. I just.
I think basic technical.
There are just certain people. Listen, there are just certain people in certain coins in crypto that I just cannot stand. Like, just even thinking about it, it was just, an ADA is definitely on that list, but
yeah.
But yeah.
I think there's an edge there. This is basic technical analysis understanding.
Yes.
Alongside doing enough footwork to understand a fundamental edge and yes. having a knowledge of the ecosystem, correlations, relationships between mid-caps, large-caps, Bitcoin versus alts, things like that. With a portfolio construction idea, if you align it all together, I think you can create some really outsized opportunities. And I still think that this dream that a lot of people have of, you know, starting with a small amount of money and then turning it into a large amount of money is still possible in crypto because of the relative volatility. Because there's both volatility of altcoins and volatility of Bitcoin. If you can smash all that together for minimizing your large losses and every now and then getting one of those big wins, I think you can really increase your wealth in such a way.
Yes, if you're patient and have some decent timing and decent rotation and discipline when you're modestly up on a coin, I think you're correct.
And I think that's one of the only reasons why I still am excited about crypto relative to legacy stuff, because we've seen a lot of volatility in legacy stuff, but it's still not the type of volatility you can get in crypto. But in crypto, your losses can be larger, I think. Especially,
but you could say this. You could have this conversation about penny stocks, right? Like,
sure, there are sectors. There are sectors, but like if you're trading the NASDAQ 100, it's just not the same type of opportunities. Of course, the NASDAQ 100 and the crypto top 100 are they're not the same thing.
Right. Like when I go down the list of top 100 crypto, it's like embarrassing that most of that stuff even still exists, you know?
Yeah. I just think the ability to pump is different in cryptos. We don't see a ton of it right now, but it's still different.
This time is different, Brian.
I'm saying different than legacy. There's more potential for like a 20% up day on some random crypto asset than there is in legacy. In legacy, I think it's harder to predict because, you know, in crypto, they like put their roadmaps out there and all that crap that they're using to try to market. And in legacy, it's more like embargoed news until it happens because they're legally bound to do, you know, to not shill those types of things.
Yeah, there's that great chart about market moves in legacy, and most of it's during off hours.
Yeah.
Like literally like 0% during open and like 80% during off hours because of the announcements and stuff. Like if anything, that's an argument for markets to just be open all the time.
I know, but I hate markets being open all the time. That's my least favorite thing about crypto, I think.
Well, if they were open all the time, then they'd make these announcements at a reasonable, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that from an edge perspective, but I don't want to look at the market all the time. Like I appreciate in legacy markets the ability to walk away at 3 o'clock local time.
Yeah, but we've really, for crypto, I think we've really cooled down on off-peak hours, you know?
Yeah, until some random London Open, which is midnight our time or whatever. And it's like, ah, crap, there's a 10% move out of nowhere. Like it'll be totally dead and off-peak until the day where Bitcoin moves $2,000 in 10 minutes while you're eating dinner on a Sunday.
Yeah, that'll happen, sure, but I still think...
Yeah, but in legacy, it happens at freaking market open Monday morning. You know, it's less stressful.
Yeah, but my point is, like, for timing and patterns and breakout trading and all that sort of stuff, I feel like it's just better to have the markets always open.
Yeah, that's probably true. But for my peace of mind...
You've got a family and children.
Yeah.
I have none of these things, you know.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about them. Hey, before we go, this IWM weekly, what do you think? Is that a failure to break out before doom?
What is IWM again?
The Russell 2000 ETF.
Oh. Let me take it up.
You can't see my tiny thumbnail.
Oh, I can't. See, looking at charts like this with gaps when you trade crypto is just so gross, you know? I don't know. Everything looks like this, right? Most of crypto looks like this.
I don't know. I think on the weekly, I think this one's the failure to follow through. It looks like a bearish retest here to me. I'm just talking my book, though, because I'm short. Not short IWM, but short legacy. Let's see what the weekly SPY looks like. Not as bad. It looks more like a bullish, like a bullish retest.
There was a good tweet I sent you yesterday. It was somebody said the VIX doesn't go under 20 until we have a coronavirus vaccine. I don't know if I agree with that. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah, it is an interesting thought. I haven't considered it that way.
If that's the case, then crypto's not going to do so hot because VIX needs to be low for crypto to do well, in my opinion.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot, and I don't know, man. It doesn't support my current positioning since I just got long metals this week. I think when I look at the VIX, it looks ripe for an up move. It looks like a bullish retest.
Yeah, I
30 looks very floor like currently to me on the VIX.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. I think crypto is too tied to legacy right now, and legacy is too tied to some random announcement by Trump or Powell, and that just isn't a market I like trading in ever. I hate announcements. I hate news, just as we were talking about off hours and stuff. I'm historically awful at trading news, so I don't like any of it.
Yeah, it's certainly challenging in its own way, like trying to fade those short time frame charts, or you know, it moves all over the place when there's Fed minutes that come out and all that kind of crap.
Right, because I don't have an edge. Like with technicals, I feel like I have an edge. Like even with minimal information, most people can have an edge for technicals. But any random announcement can just throw that off completely, you know?
Yeah. I don't love these legacy looks. I just still don't. I still think we're due a tougher retest in legacy. And the downside, the alternative there is that apparently there's like $5 trillion on the sidelines. Professional money is still really short, and they've been getting squeezed like crazy. So are they going to be able to have a chance to get out alive and trap retail, or are they going to have to chase? That's the debate that remains in legacy. And if crypto and legacy are going to continue to be correlated, then I guess you want legacy to go sideways or up to give crypto a chance to do, or give Bitcoin in particular a chance to do anything.
I just love that argument people are bringing up when the question was, why is legacy roofing when we have record unemployment historically and all this other stuff? And they're like, well, it's just pricing in the future of, you know, what's going to happen.
I don't think it's that. I think it's pricing in inflation personally.
Exactly. So it's like, what's happening now? What are we pricing in now? You know, are you pricing in second wave, third wave, fourth wave of Corona? What are we pricing in here?
Yeah, I think we're seeing inflation going into the markets, and people are, especially this also goes to why people, I think people are overweight really large caps that are going to do fine, like Amazon. I think those will outperform, and they're kind of real assets, if you will. And I think it's just a different way of seeing the potential or the fear for inflation. We're continuing. Gold and silver have refused to go down. Dips are just getting bought because I think that people are seeking that out, you know? I mean, gold looks like it's about to blast right now. I'm just looking at GLD here. I don't have, you know, XAU pulled up, but
yeah, it does look very bull pennity.
Yeah, how many times can it tap that resistance before it goes for it? And
I have a question.
When you consider where that is, like that's tapping all-time high reach type stuff without dips. Like I have this potential dip drawn on here because that's the kind of thing I was anticipating might happen. It just doesn't look like it wants to do it. It looks like it wants to just blast up.
Yeah. I have a question for you. Last question.
Yeah.
About Robinhood. What are your thoughts about people have been dumping all over Robinhood traders and Robinhood trading over the past week or two.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that as far as retail participants in the legacy markets right now?
I don't know.
Like, do you think this is a long-term thing? Do you think it's just a product of what's going on in the world right now? Is it a brain drain?
I think that people are chasing, they're chasing returns. It's like, but it's very gambling like. It feels like very late cycle type things to me. But they're, when you see people buying Hertz shares that are literally bankrupt and things like that that have happened in the market, are they're not smart investors. But it doesn't mean they can't be right for a while, like a year or two, and really screw over all of this professional money that's sitting on the sidelines and trapped, you know, trapped short or whatever else. But when I look at the overall economy and everything, I don't think this will end very well for a lot of these Robinhood traders. When you look at the number of them that are chasing stuff going bankrupt, or the longer, the further something goes down, the more Robinhood holders there are, you know, tools like RobinTrack and stuff.
What's interesting to me is all this professional money is like talking down to Robinhood, but Robinhood is
destroying them,
outperforming professional money. So it's almost like they're jealous and at the same time, like in disbelief.
Yeah. Look at, I mean, here's just one example. I clicked on the leaderboard on RobinTrack.net.
Uh-huh.
One of them is Delta Airlines. And the number of holders on Robinhood went from 22,000 at the end of February to 600,000 today. And that's with the share price going from $58 down to $30 with a low of $20. So the lower the stock went, the more Robinhood users started to hold it.
This is relevant to me because of crypto and alts, obviously.
It looks like, I don't even know what you call this. What do you call this? It's crazy.
Well, the people bought the dip, you know?
Is it buying the dip?
They bought a dip. I don't know if it's the bottom, but they bought
that's
a dip,
right? That's what I'm saying. Like, are we just seeing why is Ford the most popular? That is so weird. There's just weird. GoPro. Really?
Well, it's just, you know, stocks people know. But again, it goes back to this thing Travis Kling said a while ago at a conference I was at. He said retail was the first wave of crypto. They won't be coming back. The next wave will be institutional. This isn't his thought alone. It's a common thought amongst crypto people. But when I look at stocks and what's happening with retail there, it's like, this can happen again with anybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is proof that this money, this type of money, can go all over the place.
I mean, Robinhood, they found a use case. They found a market fit, obviously, product market fit, whatever addressable market, whatever buzzword bingo you want to pick. And it's paying off for them.
Yeah, I mean, clearly. This GoPro one's interesting. Look at this. The real spike in users holding started at the bottom, with GoPro at $2, and it's still at a high, as it looks like it's distributing now, at more than 100% increase from that, $450.
Dude,
look like a bunch of people in profit, but this doesn't scream good news to me. Like, are they just going to buy the dip again, or are they going to hold on and lose all these earnings? I tend to think they'll just bleed their winnings over time. That's my gut feeling.
Yeah, just interesting. Yeah, the GoPro chart looks like so many crypto charts right now.
I know.
It looks like Stellar like 2 weeks ago, you know?
Yeah, maybe that should be telling us something. I'm not bullish on GoPro, the company, that's for sure.
No. You know who used to track GoPro with me? It was Hearns. Him and I used to... I nearly got into GoPro probably 2 years ago and decided against it, but...
I've traded it. It's... It has swings. Look at the ones on that chart. I mean, shoot.
Yeah.
Anyway. Trade the chart. That's but right. I think we'll end up with a bunch of bag holders.
Robin, you think so?
Yeah, I think dumb money will continue to be dumb.
Really? You don't think it's different this time?
No.
All right.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Go to twitter.com/CarpeNoctum. Follow Josh. Go to ledgerstatus.com to subscribe to this podcast and more. Check out our videos. Both of us have been doing videos on YouTube. Great being with you. I hope you make all the monies. Don't be a bag holder. Enjoy your weekend. Monuments crumble.